This is Inkstud's on-location interview, I guess is the term to go with. I'm sitting with Matt Forsyth and...
And your cat.
And my cat, which is a troublemaker right now. And your book is now... You're telling me the root of the name, Ojingo Go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ojingo is the Korean word for squid. So, Ojingo, I think is the way that you know, hear it mostly in a Korean restaurant or something. And then I just put on the go for fun. It's one of those sort of afterthought things. But yeah,
kind of like that Korean pop.
Yeah.
Ojingo go!
yeah, go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ojingo go. Yeah. So I say, I guess I say Ojingo. I don't know. It's just, yeah. But I'm happy. I always say I'm just happy if anyone says it anyway.
You know? People are reading it.
Yeah.
So, tell me a bit about yourself and what got you into comics.
Yeah. Well, I guess I've been drawing, been illustrating for ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then. When I was in university, I was the editorial or the graphic artist for the school paper. This is at McMaster, and I guess that was the first time I got paid to do any sort of illustration. And then have always done illustration stuff on the side and loved comics. Think like yourself, big comic fan. And and then I did some traveling after school and ended up in Korea. And there's just this really vibrant. Cartoon culture in Korea,
mm-hmm.
And in really all of Northeast Asia. It's amazing, you know? And I was just really, really inspired and started drawing. I started an illustration like sketch blog when I was there. That was back in like 2003. And I started posting comics and got really good feedback and kept doing it. And
it eventually kind of formulated into itself from that.
Exactly, it was totally stream of consciousness, unscripted. Wasn't thinking about where it was going. Let it sort of lead the way for me, you know. And it was in that sense, it was kind of just a really fun exercise, you know. And in some ways, I felt like I had, as an illustrator, I had to sort of catch up to what the comic required, you know, because I wasn't very disciplined or very good. I don't think when I started, I think I'm a little better now, but still, you know. So, it was a little game of catch-up between me and where the comic led me, you know.
What attracted you to going to Korea?
It's
quite a step, because you're from Toronto, you're saying.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I think I knew I wanted to live in Asia, and I had got myself into quite a bit of debt when I was living in London, because it's a pretty expensive city. And
London, UK.
Yeah. And so I hit a wall in London, and I finally managed to get out of some debt there. And I went to Thailand, and I met a guy in Thailand who told me that Korea was a great place to it was a great place to make a little bit of money, maybe pay off some debt, and also like live in Asia and see Asia. So you know you can sort of bounce off from anywhere in Korea, and you know and travel around. So. I went home, I think, for a summer, and I thought about that, and and then I went to Korea that fall, and it was, and it was, like, one of the best and worst things I've ever done.
How long were you there for?
I was only there for a year, you know, but it was huge, had a huge sort of impact on me, you know, because it was really difficult to sort of, it's a complete culture shock. A lot of things in your world are... A lot of things are inverted there, you know, it definitely felt like a sort of second childhood, you know, like just learning things that I had taken for granted my whole life, like language and directions and, you know, fundamental things. And it was great. It was exactly what I needed, just to sort of take everything and dump it on the table, you know, and put it back together again, you know.
That was something I was wondering about, because language seems to be a big component of the story, or the lack of language.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the language in Ojingo Go is kind of a nonsense derivative of Hangul, which is the Korean written script, and that's something I was studying when I was living in Korea. And there's a feeling when you wake up in the morning and you walk out on the street and you're starting to learn to read a new character set, and it feels like, you know, like you're on a different planet, or you're just starting it again. It was this really inspiring, exciting feeling. So I knew that whatever I was doing, I had to incorporate that into the drawings. And I still incorporate it for so many reasons, just because I think visually, I think it looks fun, and I think there's an intuitive, I think we have an intuitive sort of understanding for what the sounds mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it just adds a sort of a nice graphic quality to images. So, I mean, I remember when I was in Korea always wanting to get Hangul kitsch, you know, which is impossible to find because they're so, they're such America files in Korea, you know?
Yeah.
They've had American army presence in Korea for the last 50 years. We're going on 60, right? So
yeah.
So all the t-shirts have bad English on them, and all, you know, and there's no real sort of, it's really hard to find a t-shirt with Hangul on it, or like a poster, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
it's kind of a weird mishmash of pop cultures.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I just wanted to do anything to sort of, to incorporate that in whatever I was doing, yeah. And I still use it in a lot of illustrations I do.
Did reading the comics there kind of help you with...
Yeah, it's a great way to learn Korean. Like, I was reading a lot of Japanese comics that were translated into Korean, and it's very simple. It's a great way to learn any new language, right, reading comics. So it was very simple, basic Korean, so I could, you know, I could follow along with the story quite easily, and it helped me learn a lot of, grammar, which is quite difficult for a foreigner, Korean mm-hmm. grammar. So, yeah, no, it was really nice. Yeah, it was really fun.
What were some interesting, just so people maybe, if they can come across it, Korean comics which we may not know?
Yeah, it's hard to say, to be honest, because so many of the comics I read were actually Japanese comics,
yeah.
And they were really finding their feet with Korean comics at the time. I mean, to be honest, some of the best comics that I, some of the most inspiring stuff was just, like, signage, because there's cartoons everywhere, just, like, signage
yeah.
around town, like, caricatures of dentists and doctors and pictures, like, instructional stuff, like, don't let your children walk across the street,
yeah.
you know, like, those sorts of, they'd use sequential art for that, or all the textbooks were available in comics, you know, so I'd read a lot of those with my kids. So that was mostly what was inspiring me, and I think I was reading Last Love Song on This Little Planet, which is a, I forget the English translation name, but it's basically a Japanese romance comic by Shin Takashi, and I think a lot of the qualities in that comic sort of affected me a lot, you know.
How old were your students?
Well, I had students that were like everywhere from 2, 3 to their parents, so I was teaching
wow.
parents once a week too.
What do you teach a 2 or 3 year old?
Yeah, you don't, right? It's babysitting, you know. You're basically like I remember my first class with them spending 40 minutes basically just trying to get them to unlock the door to the toilet stall that they'd locked themselves into, and yeah, it was and like I was my second class trying to teach them, you know, alphabet or something, and I'd turn around and they're all underneath the table sucking on toys, you know. And it's like, okay, this is clearly not going to be an educational experience. It's
yeah.
basically trying to keep you out of harm's way for an hour.
Eventually get them to go, apple.
Yeah, exactly. That would be, God, that would be marvelous. You know?
So, did you actually start on that while in Korea, like the comic itself?
Absolutely, yeah. I started while in class. I remember I drew the first drawings while I was in class with them. My friend Vanessa, who's from Vancouver, actually, she's a Japanese Canadian. She was living in Japan at the time, and she came to visit me in Korea. And we were kind of egging each other on to start. You know, she's a photographer, and you know, I was doing a lot of illustration, and I said I want to do my own comic, and she was like, "Well, just do it. You know, don't be
yeah.
Don't quit whining about it, you know." So as soon as she left, I was in class like the following Tuesday or something, and I started drawing a little sort of manga version of her, duking it out with a squid, and then the rest sort of happened.
Just flowed. Now, what attracted you about doing it as a webcomic?
Well, I was doing a blog at the time, and I loved the sort of immediate feedback and I was completely isolated, you know, so it was any sort of sense of community or any sort of sense of feedback was really important to me, you know. I was pretty, yeah, like there, I think in the town I was living in, there were like 40 other foreigners, and there was, the town was populated well over a million, so it was just like my only outlet to, you know, to speak, you know,
yeah,
English with other people, you know. Yeah, and at the time it was a really vibrant time for, it was a really like exciting time for webcomics. Like a lot of the guys and girls from Flight were doing their were starting to do their sketches, and the first book was just about to come out, and they yeah, so it was like a lot of cross pollination of ideas. It seemed like a really, really exciting time to be hopping onto the comics, you know.
Tell me about the world in the comic.
Yeah, it's, well, it's, I guess it's the land of Han, which is, Han is, it means Korea, basically. It's, if you're a Korean, you're a Hanguk. So it's inspired a lot by sort of Korean traditional villages, and then there's also an underworld, that our protagonist gets sort of pulled into, and
the nameless one.
Yeah, nameless, and sort of. Well, I think I call it like Jihakie or something, which is the Korean word for underworld. So it's just, yeah. I mean, that's what's great about, you know, having, you know, using Korean as a toolbox. You can just kind of pull out translations, but if the words are nice. Yeah. There's, I don't know. It's just sort of a blank page world. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's something. It seems interesting. Where it's now, I want to make sure you don't get this wrong. It seems like a lot of it is just playing with the characters and just seeing where they're taking. Like, it's not necessarily a narrative as much as just
exactly, yeah,
as play.
Yeah, I think it might be disappointing as a, if you look at it as a traditional narrative, but it's, yeah, definitely, it's just playing on the page, you know. And I think the page is, I mean, and I felt that way when I started doing it on the web. You've got this, you know, they call it infinite canvas or whatever,
yeah,
you know, just this white space that's so gorgeous to sort of dance around on, you know. And I look at, like, if you ever look at, like, the illustrations of Jean-Jacques Sempé, and he uses, like, all this blank space to great effect in his very comical illustrations, you know.
Mobius says stuff like that, too, where you have these grand scapes.
Yeah, and then, which leads to a lot of playing around with scale and size in the comic too, like things getting bigger, and it has more effect when you fill a page when you've just seen a few blank pages, you know. It's all about sort of playing with contrast and expectations, you know. I've been reading this book about simplicity and about how simplicity can't exist unless complexity also exists, because there's nothing to compare it to,
mm-hmm,
right? So I mean, I think it's relevant a bit here too. You know?
It's kind of a two-handed mechanism.
Yeah.
So when did you decide to start collecting it?
Well, that was not,
because you've got mini comics of it, I've seen.
Yeah, I had some. I think I really wanted to put it into a book, and I'm just so slow, and it was taking so long. I just thought, well, I'd love to just have a little mini comic to, and I think TCAF, which is the Toronto Comic Arts Convention festival, which the Guy Link puts on in Toronto, was coming up, and so I thought it'd be great to have a little book for that. And that was just a wonderful experience, you know. I remember, like, Sammy Harkin was there, and all these heroes of mine, a lot of guys from Flight, and, you know, like Derek Kim, and
all swell folks.
Yeah, like, just and it was just wonderful to be sort of there with them, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was a natural sort of opportunity, you know, to collect it as a little mini. And then a couple of years later, Chris from DNQ contacted me about doing a petit livre with them. So I mean, obviously that was very exciting. You know, I'm a huge fan of everything they do. So I find at these conventions, I just gravitate to the DNQ table, and I'm like, basically, it's a question of math of how much I can afford. You know.
The prioritizing. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know it.
Now, you got nominated for 2 Eisners, was it?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy. It was crazy. It was early in, I think, I think it was early in the life of webcomics, you know, and I don't think a lot of, and I think Eisner's decided that they were important enough that they wanted to, or interesting enough that they wanted to include them in the awards, and yeah, it was great.
Are there any webcomics that you enjoy?
There's lots. I think it's a mine that a lot of people are, I think people are recognize the value in webcomics now, and there's a lot of brilliant artists have moved to the medium, and like a lot of, few of the Transmission X comics are wonderful, like the, you know, like Abominable Charles Christopher by my friend Carl Kershaw, and there's another comic, Kookaburri, in there, which is very good, and I love the simplicity, like, you know, XKCD or whatever. It's this great sort of webcomic that riffs on physics jokes. And it's just Stickman, you know? It's just Stickman, but it's brilliant, you know? Every week, or every day, actually, it's brilliant.
Wow.
That's a lot. Yeah, there's tons. It's in sort of a Perry Bible Fellowship, you know, Wigu, all these the dinosaur comics. You know, there's so many good ones. No way.
I'm on the hater list of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I look at it, just there's nothing for me. I know it's supposed to be witty and interesting, but
Well, after 4 hours of reading the dinosaur, cause that's what I do, right? To be honest, I don't read anything every week, you know? But every year I'll kind of pop in and see what, you know, what's happening, and he definitely has his own voice, you know, and it's really and there's a lot of his stuff. Yeah.
Breaking the signal so it's totally unreadable. Drinking the dregs, eating the utterly inedible. We do what we do, all for you. All dressed up, black hat and white cane. Slowly circling the drain. Ready for the future. Ready for the world about to come. Treatment's even finished. Sanding numbers off the monojects as our slight returns diminish. We are what we are. Get in the goddamn car. Smiling faces flawlessly rehearsed. We are sleek and beautiful. We are cursed. Ready for the future. Ready for the world about to come.
Now, what's the other kind of stuff you do other than comics for ERT?
Oh, I work at the National Film Board, and I do web stuff there, too. So, like, I've got this long sort of background. Like, when I was working in England and Ireland, I was doing, you know, web stuff and computer stuff. I'm pretty passionate about websites and communities online. So I'm helping the Film Board create strategies for their films.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's really fun, because I think the next year is going to be exciting. We're working on a website for to put a lot of the film National Film Board archives online for free.
Really?
Yeah.
So like a lot of the old great cartoons. And
yeah. Oh yeah. 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 A lot
so
of
many good cartoons.
There's so yeah, so much great stuff which I'd never even heard of. You know, and I feel strongly that it's, you know, public material, like we, you know, it's been paid for by Canadians. I feel really strongly that that they should be able to see it. I remember when I was teaching in Korea, I remember it was Canada Day, and I thought, oh, it would be nice to show them like the hockey sweater or something, and I couldn't find any of the, you know, and I couldn't find it anywhere online, and I was just like, and then I finally found a DVD of it for sale for like $60 or something. Yeah, and it's like a 10-minute film, right? And I was like, this is silly. Like, this should be freely available for everyone to see how, you know, how fun Canadian history is, you know? And so now it is. And then pretty soon Hockey Sweater will be online for free. And it's, you know, it's kind of like a little higher quality than YouTube, sort of. So anyway, that's it. NFB.ca. So if anyone's
that's
interested, they can check.
Well, it's interesting the influence that NFB's had, because I had Marv Newland on back in the summer, who did the Bambi Meets Godzilla.
Okay, yeah,
and
yeah.
And Rocket Ship Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And he got an animation because of the NFB stuff when he lived in San Francisco.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's not, like, and then him, being influenced by that, comes up here and starts his own studio in Vancouver,
yeah.
Which influences all these other people. Like, you know, we've all seen Lupo the Butcher, which came out of Rocket Ship. And
right. Right, yeah, and there's so many filmmakers who are inspired, like, I didn't even, like, you know, Arthur Lipsett did some experimental filmmaking in the 50s, and that's influenced, like, the whole, like, you know, George Lucas and the Coppola, you know, that set of California, because they had a professor at the University in California where they're, who's a huge NFB fan, and he's showing all these sort of experimental NFB shorts.
Wonder if that's where Marsai is.
Maybe. No, right, it could be,
Wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, so hopefully, I mean, hopefully this stuff, can you imagine now if this stuff is available just outside of film schools for everyone to,
it'd
be interesting to see the, you know, the potential for art and, you know, great art and inspiration to come out of it.
It is, and it's just that whole, I said you don't need to weed through this. That's one of the problems with the whole YouTube phenomenon. There's so much, crap.
It's overwhelming, isn't it?
You have to find that one gem. Now you also do other art stuff too, though, don't you?
Yeah, well, I do like
do some silk screening.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, actually, I tried my hand at silk screening, but I really suck at it. It really takes more planning and preparation. So I did some silk screening for this. Vancouver event, but I got a friend to do it. I just made the screens for. I just made the plates or whatever. I don't know what they're called.
The screens.
yeah, the screens, and then she made the physical screens. Anyway, I feel like you know, I look at the work of like Julie Doucet or like Dave Cooper, you know, and how they like they love comics and they do comics, but it's not their only. You know, it's not their only outlet. They do paintings, and
well, they don't
she does collages and journals. And
I don't think either of them do comics anymore.
It's true. Yeah. Well. Yeah. She kind of did that 365 thing, which felt a bit comic-y.
Yeah. It was. It was a comic, but I mean, that was done about 5 years ago.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. A lot of people don't realize that, but it's.
Oh, really?
It was published in by L'Association.
Yeah, yeah.
First, and then by Toronto Quarterly.
Man, and it's like $50 for the French version. I want to buy the French version to practice my French with. But it's $50 for that for the import.
Really?
So, yeah. So I'll have to buy the translation, I guess.
My friend, he very bilingual, and he goes to Quebec and he tries to find some good French comics, and he's finding all this Safar and the Trondheim stuff, but it's so expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's up with that?
It's ridiculous.
But
I know what you mean.
It's funny though, if you want to get some good cheap stuff, is you can get a lot of Hugo Pratt's stuff in French for cheap.
You can't get
in English at all. Like, I've got some, but they're about $50 a book in English.
Well, living in Montreal is wicked, because you can go to the library and have an awesome like Bede room at the Bibliothèque Nationale, which is and actually I think I saw, I haven't read it, but in 365 Julie Doucet talks about going to the Bibliothèque Nationale. It's basically a room like this, but all the walls are covered with awesome French comics, and they have And the French are way ahead of us with Japanese translations, so they have tons of great manga translations and manhwa translations from Korean China.
Beyond just the Tezuka.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
As wonderful as the Tezuka is, I'm presuming there's a lot more
stuff. Yeah, there's so much great. It's just a world of awesome stuff that's finally being opened up, you know?
My problem is all the Japanese comics that I've seen have been the poppy stuff, so kind of, you know, left a bad taste in my mouth.
Right, yeah. I feel like there's sometimes a place for that, but there's also the, I'm a huge fan of the Urasawa. He's like one of their sort of rock star.
That sounds familiar.
He did a book called Monster. It's about, you know, it's like a detective story about this guy chasing a serial killer, right? And then he did another one called 20th Century Boys, which is about this group of kids in school who become like superheroes when they get older and have to save the world from another kid in school. Anyway, like, there's just something fantastic about the way he tells stories, and it's purely inspired by Tezuka. In fact, his new book is called Pluto, and it's a retelling of, it's like Blade Runner sort of retelling of Astro Boy. Yeah. It's like, this is about this detective who goes around trying to figure out who's murdering all these famous robots. So it's really
exciting. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. I would highly recommend you check it out.
And that's out in English?
Or? Well, the Viz is releasing Pluto in English in the spring.
Okay.
Yeah. There we
go.
Yeah.
So what kind of other comics are you going to be working on?
Well, I want to do more of this. I'm going to do another Jingo Go. I've got funding to do that, so I'm excited to to get that rolling.
Such a Canadian term.
I know.
Funding.
I know.
Thank you, government.
And I'm doing, and I've started writing some stories from my experiences on the Trans-Siberian. I came back from Korea overland.
Oh wow!
And there's just tons of little stories that sort of happened on that trip that I'd love to put down. And so right now I'm just experimenting with different styles. Also, I'm working on a children's book in a completely different style that I'm excited about too. Very sort of flat retro feeling style. So yeah, we'll see.
Seems like you have fun doing your comics.
Yeah, that's it. First and foremost, fun, right? I've some friends who work in mainstream comics, and fun is not part of their their schedule.
It's
just so sad, you know.
One guy, mainstream guy, said it best to me. He said it's graphic design.
Yeah,
that's mainstream comics. It's like, you know, it's not comic. You're doing graphic design. You're doing, you know, you got to draw Batman a certain way for this page, and
I mean, in some cases they're miserable, these guys, you know, it's just because they're working so hard on stories that aren't theirs and they don't have any stake in, you know, it's a really weird, and like, I have to say, like, I think the whole thing is toxic, like, I mean, not the whole thing, but I think large parts of it are toxic about taking one story and, like one hero myth and, you know, and forcing it to be retold over and over again. I feel like we have all these superheroes in a sweatshop, you know? And it's like, it's sick. There's something kind of abusive about it, you know?
Yeah.
And then all these great artists, I feel like some of them are wasting their time doing, like the Killing Joke Part 19 or something.
Well, it's interesting, like, because you look in any other medium and you wouldn't see such an extension of characters. Even, like, I've been doing studying classical literature in school right now, and like, you know, there's a lot of continuous characters, like with like Ulysses and Odysseus and Persephone, and how that's kind of developed in, you know, Aeneid, Aeneas's journeys and stuff, and how a lot of people have their own take on that. But to kind of like do, like, just think of the massive amount, like how many Batman comics, it's got to be 2,000 at least.
Yeah, and you feel like it's like an extension of our abuse of the environment, you know, like we'll just take things until they don't yield anymore in the, you know, in the environment, and that you feel like these corporations are taking from these superheroes until they just don't yield anymore, you know.
Superman's been tilled and can't be tilled anymore.
Anyway.
Such an East Coast agrarian term.
But anyway, without being, so
when do you think the next book will be?
You know what?
A year and a bit.
I think I could do it in a year if I'm really disciplined about it. You know.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna, I presume you'll probably be at TCAF.
Oh yeah, that would be Have you been to TCAF?
No, I'm gonna go this year though.
Great,
it's,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's awesome. I think it's the best comics festival there is. It's like such a positive, you know, experience, you know, and such a great mix of inspiring artists.
Yeah. Must be good for you going from being in the isolation in Korea,
yeah,
to like going to this comic convention, like. Hey, there's people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, for sure, it feels like it's really nice.
Well, thanks for taking the time to sit and chat with me today. Well, coming by my pad.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Trekking up the 4 flights of stairs.
It was a pleasure.
The only building like this in Vancouver, but some reason I live here. So the book is Ojingogo, or Jingogo.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Matt Forsyth from Drawing Quarterly, and good comic stores will have it, and if they don't have it, they're not a good comic store.
Or ask them to get it.
And then they'll be a good comic store.
Yeah.
Tell them they will only be good if they order it.
Give them the opportunity to. Yeah.
Before they fail.
Now I'm going to root through your 3,000 comics and see what you have here.
There's nothing here, people. Nothing.